First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
What's going on, America? It's Thursday afternoon on the Sports Map Radio Network. That's right. My name is Greg Frank. NBA play-in tournament continued last night in Toronto and New Orleans. And we'll discuss the two games last night. For the first time ever, the 10 seeds emerged victorious in the play-in tournament. I say that as if there's such a lengthy history of this thing. It's only the third year of the existence of the play-in tournament. But regardless, Chicago and Oklahoma City come out victorious on the road against the Raptors and Pelicans, respectively. So we'll talk about that. And, you know, I am intrigued, to say the least, by what happens with Nick Nurse now that the Raptors season is over. Ian Harrison covers the Raptors for the AP. We'll join to, I'm sure, dive a little deeper into that. And we'll discuss the future for the team in the six in about 30 minutes. And then later on in the show, Bill Schmidt, our buddy from 97.3 The Game, WMKE in Milwaukee, will join as the ongoing standoff between the Jets and the Packers for the services of one Aaron Rodgers continues. We talked about it yesterday. Basically, radio silence from both sides. And we are about a month removed now from Aaron Rodgers going on the McAfee show and saying that he intends to play for the New York Jets. So we'll get the Wisconsin perspective on the standoff continuing. But I wanted to start with the play-in tournament today. And I'll tell you, one thing that I talked about yesterday, and we'll get to it a little bit more today, is the fact that when you watch these teams in isolated, standalone, nationally televised games, a lot of times you realize, oh, yeah, that's why this team was 40 and 42. That's why this team was 41 and 41, and that's just all they are. So while that is the consensus opinion that I gathered from a lot of teams in the play-in tournament this year, I think that the one team that you can leave this play-in tournament, which is not over, obviously, we got two more eight-seed games tomorrow, but the one team that you can leave this week from in the NBA and say, there's something there, and there is something to build off of, and they have a bright future, is the Oklahoma City Thunder, undoubtedly. Because if you're in the play-in tournament, as I said, you're hovering around 500. And the best kind of hovering around 500 you can be is when you overachieve, when everybody thinks you're going to suck, and you end up winning 40 games and getting to the play-in tournament. Because what that usually means is that you have a young nucleus that grew up faster than you thought. Hence, you end up being around 500. And that was Oklahoma City this year, and it continued last night with a win in New Orleans. The Thunder were probably the biggest overachiever in the National Basketball Association this year. Their Las Vegas win total was 23.5. I don't know when exactly the over cashed when they picked up their 24th win, but you didn't have to sweat it if you went over that number. And you look at their young core that is blossoming. Josh Giddey, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, we talked about yesterday as a potential most improved player candidate. Jalen Williams from Santa Clara. They also have another Jalen Williams youngster from Arkansas. Lou Dort, the Canadian, continues to get better. All these guys on rookie contracts, all these guys, actually, I think SGA might be on his second contract now, but regardless, 25 years and older, and everybody's getting better. There's up arrows for all these guys. And oh, by the way, Chet Holmgren hasn't played yet for the Thunder, and he was the number two overall pick in last year's draft, a guy who I believed should have been the number one overall pick in the draft, because I think the ceiling with what Chet Holmgren can potentially be is so tantalizing that if you are a team at the top of the draft, you take that risk. And Oklahoma City has had to wait a year for Chet Holmgren. Philadelphia had to wait 2 years for Joel Embiid. Giannis wasn't super developed when Milwaukee drafted him. Sometimes it's part of the deal with these big guys growing into their bodies. But imagine if Chet Holmgren hits his ceiling to go with this core that continues to get better on the court right now. And then when we look ahead, Oklahoma City holds 15 first-round draft picks over the next five drafts. And what that allows them to do is make a trade for a superstar that becomes available. And we all know disgruntled stars is a nature, is a fact of life in the NBA. And yeah, people probably listen and are like, oh, well, who's going to stay in Oklahoma City? That's not the point. If you think when the time comes, and it may be as early as, say, 2025 for the Thunder, if this core keeps getting better, when the time comes to push some more chips into the middle of the table, and if there's a guy available, I have always been a proponent of you go get him regardless of if you think you can retain him. The Toronto Raptors traded for Kawhi Leonard. Does anybody in Toronto regret that trade? Of course not, because they only had him for one season, but that one season they won the NBA championship. That's why you do this thing. The Oklahoma City Thunder are positioned to trade for whoever it is that becomes disgruntled in due time, and we all know that that is the nature of the NBA. And it's funny, I mentioned 2025. There's a guy not that far south of Oklahoma City in Dallas. Luka Doncic can become a free agent in 2026. We talked earlier in the week about the Mavs not, you know, the tank situation that they had on Friday night. And, you know, the Mavs have 3 years really to kind of appease Luka. And who knows what will happen there the next year or two. People think maybe Luka is the next disgruntled star that might want out of his current situation. And, you know, even if that happens before Luka is to hit free agency, that's what I'm talking about, where even though you're not a destination market, if you have the draft capital to go out and acquire one of these guys and you think this is what puts you over the hump in 3-4 years or whatever their timeline is there in Oklahoma City, you go and do it. And you try and win the thing. And this is how you have to operate as a small market team, and they are doing it exceptionally well. Sam Presti has been in charge there dating back to when they were still in Seattle in 2007. Drafted Durant, drafted Russell Westbrook, drafted James Harden. And Belmer and I were having a conversation yesterday about the fact that, you know, it's interesting. In the NBA, we do have a lot of one-team, pro-team cities. One-team markets in terms of they don't have anything else in that market other than the NBA. The Utah Jazz, the Sacramento Kings, the Portland Trailblazers, the Orlando Magic, and the Oklahoma City Thunder are like that as well. And so again, these kinds of markets in the NBA aren't necessarily the biggest destinations, but if you draft right, you're always going to have a chance. And while Portland maybe didn't, and still hasn't gotten to the heights it hoped it could get to with Damian Lillard, obviously, they hit on that draft pick. Utah, being able to draft Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, still was able to get to the second round every year. Orlando drafted Dwight Howard and got to an NBA Finals. And if you can supplement the roster around some of your centerpieces, regardless of where you're playing, you have a chance. And the Thunder have already put a very nice young core on the court right now that's still playing basketball in 2023. That's before Chet Holmgren plays a game for them, and they have 15 draft picks in the first round in the next 5 years. So that's the kind of team that ends up in the play-in tournament that you should be excited about. Because oftentimes there aren't up arrows next to these teams in the play-in tournament. It's either a hyphen, no arrow, just kind of a dash, and it's just, this is what they are. They're kind of boring, but, 41 and 41. Or there's a down arrow, which is what Toronto is, where it's like, okay, you got your championship, now what? Unequivocally for Oklahoma City, you look at what they have, and you say, oh, there's a lot there. Paolo Banchero is going to win the Rookie of the Year, but we mentioned yesterday Zach Lowe in his kind of awards rankings had Jalen Williams, the wing out of Santa Clara, who they drafted at the back end of the lottery, like I think he was like the 13th or 14th pick in last year's draft. He was his number two candidate for the Rookie of the Year award. And that's the thing that Sam Presti and Oklahoma City have done well for a while now, is draft well, identify good talent at various portions of the draft, different areas to find different roster players that can fill roles. And, you know, they also understand that things are going to be cyclical. Like, they lost Durant to the Warriors in free agency. And, okay, they Russ wanted to be there. They kept Westbrook around. He won an MVP. They weren't bad, but, you know, they weren't good enough. And in due time, they had to move on from Westbrook. And they had to, you know, go in the gutter for a little bit. But, you know, look at what's happened on the other end of it. When you have the right people in place, the right scouts, the right player development people, and you draft well, you're always going to have a chance. I don't care where you are. Put an NBA team in Siberia. If they draft good players to that team, guess what? They're going to be good. So I don't know if Oklahoma City will ever become a destination. You know, and you know, Belmar, we did talk a little bit about it yesterday, how there is kind of a coolness to the fact that that's the only team in that area.
Yeah, I think it gives it a unique twist, right?
Yeah. You know, like the relationship between the Blazers and their fans in Portland, and I'm sure the Thunder have a lot of fans in Oklahoma City.
Utah especially.
Utah, another example of that. You don't think of it as a big-time traditional sports market, but when you're the first team in at a market, there's got to be a little bit of a, you know, a nice kind of tug at the heartstrings feeling there. We'll take a timeout. Let's go to the game in Toronto last night. The Bulls rally in the fourth quarter. We'll discuss. First in sports, Sports Map Radio.
Come on. It's a two-possession game. Chicago up four. And a little token pressure in the front court by Caruso. Siakam with a head of steam. Gathers it. Van Vliet fires the three. Off the mark. This one is over. Chicago is headed to South Beach.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
There's a call last night on ESPN as Mark Jones details the Bulls rallying in the fourth quarter to eliminate the Toronto Raptors from the play-in tournament. And the Bulls will head to Miami where they will square off with the Heat tomorrow night for the right to play the Milwaukee Bucks in the 1-8 matchup in the NBA playoffs in the Eastern Conference. So, while I just sang the praises of the Oklahoma City Thunder for where they are as a franchise, and they are ahead of schedule, and it's obviously a lot of excitement, I'm sure, if you're a Thunder fan for where they might be headed, and you see them now. I mean, who's to say they can't beat the Timberwolves tomorrow night, right? It sure feels like we have seen the steady erosion of a champion up there in Canada with the Raptors. And, you know, they let the game get away last night. Firm grasp on it. They get outscored 37-24 in the fourth quarter. And sayonara to the Toronto Raptors. Before we get into some of the Raptors stuff, it was a great Zach LaVine game. You know, he balled out for the Bulls. 39 points, 12 for 22 from the field. And do we have the DeMar DeRozan cut? We do. Okay, let's give the Bulls their moment here as well, as not only was it a good Zach LaVine game, but cool little story here from DeMar DeRozan with his daughter. Of course, DeMar DeRozan used to play for the Raptors, and his daughter wanted to go back to Toronto. Here was DeRozan after the game telling that story.
My daughter called me the other day when she was getting out of school, and she was just, you know, she just said, "Dad, can I come to the Toronto game?" I remember going to all the Toronto games when she was a kid, and I almost said no because she in school back home. She kept asking. She was just adamant about coming to support. And I just said, you can miss one day of school and, you know, come to a game. And I'm glad I did. I owe her some money for sure.
How was she coming,
Fred? Nah, she got to go back to school. School class. Yeah.
Pretty cool. I mean, you know, let's understand the personal side of sports when you have families and kids that are moving with the families. And listen, DeMar DeRozan, I think it's a little unfortunate sometimes, and you have players like this that are good players, that it's not their fault they're the best player on the team, and because, and we all know, well, that team's not good enough if that's your best player. DeMar DeRozan was kind of one of those guys. You know, I saw this with my team, the Sixers, a lot before the process started. The best player was Andre Iguodala. And you know what? Iguodala was a nice player. But the best they were ever able to do was sneak into the playoffs and lose in the first round. But it sure seemed like DeRozan, when he was included in the Kawhi Leonard trade, like there was a lot of a good relationship there with the Raptors fans and DeRozan. And again, he was on the other side of things last night. But I just heard that and thought, yeah, the box score is what we look at, and the scoreboard is ultimately what matters in the scheme of the game. Like, you want to win. But, you know, there's a personal side of this that, as fans, we can forget about sometimes. So that was cool. You know, a good DeRozan game, good LaVine game, and a nice little moment there for DeMar DeRozan and his daughter. But as far as the Raptors are concerned, like I said, it's been a steady erosion of, you know, well, Kawhi Leonard leaves, and, you know, they had a really bad 2020, 2021. They weren't even in the playoffs. And last year they were a hefty underdog against Philly. Kind of made it interesting, but lost in six games in the first round. And now they're in the play-in tournament. They lose last night. And I think teams like the Raptors are a lot more of what you see in this play-in tournament. Where, you know, Oklahoma City is the exception of, like, hey, they're on the up, like, they should be good for a while. But the Raptors have gotten progressively worse. They've only won one playoff series since the 2019 NBA championship. And I think the common denominator with a lot of these teams is just some roster atrophy or some stagnation, where you just kind of look and say, okay, like, I'm not taking you seriously, but yeah, your roster doesn't suck, so you're somewhere in between. And it'll be interesting how Masai Ujiri and the Raptors brass navigate the waters in the offseason. Because if you look at the Eastern Conference, while the Sixers could look a little bit different next year, James Harden, you know, a lot of rumblings about him going back to Houston. The Bucks, you know, they're not going away. Boston, again, some rumblings about Jaylen Brown, but certainly would expect Boston to, we're actually going to get to this a little bit later on the show. Boston is the longest active playoff streak in the NBA, so you'd expect them to keep staying good. And then you have teams on the up like the Knicks and the Cavaliers, you know, and the Nets recouped a ton of draft picks from the Suns, and they have some players. So if you're the Raptors, where are you breaking through? And it's funny because while the Atlanta Hawks won the game on Tuesday night against Miami, we talked earlier this week about how Atlanta might really be, they've kind of gone backwards. Since making the conference finals in 2021, it's been play-in tournament for Atlanta the last two postseasons. And so when that happens, and when you're in an East where we can at least look at the top four or five and say, okay, there might be some staying power here, doesn't it make sense to go the other way? Like, doesn't it just make sense to say we got our championship and maybe we should move on and go in a different direction? And by different direction, I just mean, you know, do you look at moving some players? Do you look at getting younger? And all it's the kind of central focus here with the Raptors is the coach and Nick Nurse and his future there in the six. And I kind of get it. Like, I kind of get why, if you're Nick Nurse, you might say, okay, I've done everything I can do with this version of the Raptors, and Nurse is already a hot candidate for the Rockets job. And if you look at the Rockets, you say, well, okay, they've been bad the last couple of years. Obviously, the post-James Harden Rockets have been a clown show, but have they gone through the worst of it? You know, Jalen Green, Jabari Smith, high pick coming, James Harden maybe coming back, money to spend, rumors about maybe Jalen Brown or Draymond Green, you know, bringing in somebody else. Like, are the Rockets about to come out of the cellar, whereas are the Raptors about to enter the cellar? And if you're Nick Nurse, like, that's kind of what you have to look at. And that's, again, the thing with these teams in the play-in tournament. I mentioned it earlier in the week. San Antonio was in the play-in tournament last year. They're one of the worst teams in the NBA this year. It's a lot more likely when you're playing in these games that you are going backwards than going forward. That's why Oklahoma City's the exception. You know, even the Bulls that won the game. And it's a little unfortunate if you're a Chicago fan, because you would think Chicago's one of the best sports markets in America. You guys should be a destination. You should be able to add to this core. But I don't know. It really hasn't been that way. Like, think about the big – what off the top of your head, like, what big free agents have the Bulls gotten? And, you know, they drafted Derrick Rose. And, okay, like, I can't remember if Lonzo Ball was a free agent or if they traded for him. But, yeah, I think it was a trade. So
same thing for Zach LaVine. Was that a trade? Or
I think that was a trade as well. They drafted Jimmy Butler. So it's weird where, you know – the Bulls kind of feel like a team that, well, they're all kind of, the roster is not young, but they're 40 and 42, and it's like, I use that word stagnation. Okay, congratulations on your win last night, but now what? LaVine was traded on draft night 2017 from Minnesota to, I believe he was in the Jimmy Butler trade. When Butler was going from Chicago to Minnesota, LaVine got drafted by the Wolves. So the Raptors are at one of these typical crossroad points that a lot of teams that lose in the play-in tournament have to face themselves with. What do we do? How can we get better? How much better can we get in one offseason? And how does the whole thing, like, what's our ceiling if we do try and get better? None of it seems all that great. So, yeah, I could maybe see why Nick Nurse might look for greener pastures. We'll talk more about that with Ian Harrison, covers the Raptors for the AP. He's our guest on the other side. First Name Sports, SportsNet Radio.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
Okay, we are back on a Thursday afternoon. Let's go out to the Progressive guest line. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. As we bring on Ian Harrison, covers the Raptors and the Blue Jays for the AP. Ian, thanks a lot for your time. How are you doing on this Thursday?
Doing very well, thank you.
All right, well, I'm going to ask you a simple question. I don't know if everybody has found the answer yet in Toronto, but what happened last night in the fourth quarter?
Kind of what happened to a bunch of this team this year. They seem to forget how to play basketball or play together. But Zach LaVine happened too. He had a monster second half and kind of took that game over for the Bulls. But yeah, Raptors scored the first 8 points of the second half. They were up 19 after Fred VanVleet three. And from there, it just really fell apart, and sort of the perfect sum up game for a season that was just all about mediocrity and disappointment, unfortunately.
You know, I chuckle because we've been having a lot of guests on this week that cover teams in the play-in tournament, and it feels like we say the same thing with all these teams. Well, you know, a couple things went right, a couple things didn't go right, and here we are.
Yeah, I think the Raptors thought many more things would go right for them this season. You know, they won 48 games last year. They were the five seed in the East, a bit of a surprise, you know, coming off a rough year the year before, but, you know, having Scotty Barnes as the rookie of the year and the energy he brought, and being back in front of full houses of fans here in Toronto, you know, I think they thought that there were lots of good things waiting to grow and develop. But really, it sort of seemed as if, you know, everything that went good the year before, everything kind of went bad this year, and sort of flaws on the roster were exposed, and the team that couldn't really shoot and didn't have a true center for most of the season. And so they landed Jakob Poeltl at the trade deadline. And, you know, there was a lot of sort of unease, I think, about, you know, the direction the team was going to go in and around the deadline. Were they going to blow it up and move people? In the end, they didn't do that. They kind of made a sort of, you know, a minor upgrade, hoping that might be enough to get them into the postseason. But, yeah, here they are for just the second time in 10 seasons outside of the playoff picture. So not a place the Raptors are used to being.
Okay, so when we look at the post-2019 Raptors, ever since they won the NBA championship, obviously you lose Kawhi Leonard in free agency, that's not going to help, but they had a pretty good team the year after, won a playoff series in the bubble, got to the playoffs last year. Is there anything that you can kind of pinpoint as to what has kind of contributed to the slow erosion of the post-2019 Raptors?
I think, you know, it's sort of a malaise, if you will, that, you know, it sort of struck me today. It's just sort of been different versions of run it back with diminishing returns each year. You know, you made the point like Kawhi left, but that team that whose season was disrupted by COVID and eventually lost the 7-game series to Boston in the second round in the bubble, you know, the people in Toronto were going to go to their graves wondering what that team could have done even without Kawhi. It felt as if in a world where, you know, the season doesn't stop, that maybe that Raptors team rolls right back at least to a conference finals appearance. But, you know, I think that the sort of, as good as they were at that point, the sort of long-term prognosis was not so clear and not so good. You had, you know, an aging Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka, whose time at the sort of, you know, peak performance was coming to an end. Kyle Lowry clearly, you know, didn't have a ton left at that point. And you know, the Raptors had very high hopes for the players coming up there, Siakam and Ananobi and Fred VanVleet, and those guys have been, you know, the different levels. They're all NBA or All-Star caliber, and Ananobi's case, the Defensive Player of the Year candidate. But for whatever reason, you know, that core, and maybe it's, you know, it extends to the sort of flaws of the supporting cast, but that core has just not been able to sort of match the, you know, the exploits of the group that came before. And granted, you know, those are pretty, that's a pretty tall order, but yeah, it just has, it hasn't ever looked like being, you know, at anything close to that level, a sort of consistent conference finals performance or anything like that. It just hasn't been quite there.
All right, Ian, so now obviously the big question about the Raptors' future is that involving the coach. What do you think is going to happen here with Nick Nurse?
Yeah, it was a weird situation. It sort of, you know, he publicly expanded on his desire to reflect on his future after 10 years on the staff, last 5 as head coach, you know, late in the season, and then you know, the Raptors sort of had their exit interviews today, and Nurse was much more positive and rosy. He spoke about, you know, how he'd had no problem working with the front office here and Masai Ujiri, and how he still really loves it here. And then sort of a need to kind of get that culture back to where it needs to be, in his words. You know, to hear him talk 2 weeks ago, it seemed as if, you know, a foot and a couple of toes were already out the door. And maybe, you know, that a couple of weeks of reflection will cool things down. But yeah, it's funny because there, you know, he might be the first of a few dominoes to flip around here. If you know, guys opt out of their contracts, Fred VanVleet and Gary Trent Jr. can do that. And, you know, it's sort of how Nurse's status, impacts the roster or vice versa will be, you know, will bear watching as summer develops for the Raptors, for sure.
You mentioned Masai Ujiri. I suppose whether Nurse is there or not, he has certainly earned a lot of trust in the hearts of Raptors fans. And I feel like he's somebody that, as long as he's kind of commanding the ship, you should still feel good about the direction of the Raptors, even if they maybe peel a few layers back, right?
In large part, yes. Although I think one quibble that, you know, Raptor fans might have is, and this might not be entirely on Nick, but he certainly, I think, bears some responsibility, is that the team has just not done a great job in the last few years of what they were doing previously, which was developing young players. You know, Siakam and Van Vliet and even Poeltl, who started here, are guys who, you know, who the Raptors drafted and developed and turned into these good players, but they have kind of whiffed on that in the last few years. And Nurse is, more so than any coach in the NBA, has leaned on his starters extremely heavily. And the bench just has been this sort of constant glaring weakness because they just can't find anyone that they can trust or anyone who's going to play at a high enough level. So, I mean, as good and as inventive as Nick Nurse, the coach of the year and championship winning coaches, you know, there are some sort of grumblings around the edges of have the Raptors sort of lost their way in developing young players and leaning too much, you know, put 38 minutes a night for Fred and Pascal.
Last thing on that, I mean, Ujiri makes the trade for Kawhi Leonard, and that obviously gets them over the hump. Like, is there a sense that, like, that's what it's going to have? You mentioned drafting and trying to be able to develop your own players. Like, is Toronto just, I imagine it's never going to be that hot of a free agent destination in the NBA, so that's just what you have to do, right?
You know, I actually would quibble with the idea that, I mean, you know, Toronto will always be foreign and, you know, its own thing when it comes to NBA free agent cities. But I also think that the success of this team and this franchise and the way that they have grown things, built a great practice facility here, you know, got a great building with great fans. I think some of that stigma on coming here has kind of, you know, mellowed out in the last few years, you know. I mean, it gets cold and crappy most of the time, but it's pretty much the same in Chicago and Milwaukee and New York, but they manage to. But, you know, ultimately, a couple of things. I mean, I think to boil it down, the real future of this team kind of rests a lot on what Scotty Barnes turns into, because he is the highest draft pick that this team's had in over a decade, I think. And, you know, now that they're out of the playoffs and into the lottery, they will be hoping that the balls fall their way this year and they can maybe add somebody else. But, yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think, you know, that there is the chance of some large swing this summer, and maybe Ujiri will package, maybe it's Pascal Siakam going out the door for some other piece. I certainly would not put that past him. But yeah, I think, you know, it's at some level kind of looking for those overlooked diamonds and shining them up is kind of what this team has tried to do.
There he is, Ian Harrison from the AP, covers the Raptors and the Blue Jays on the Progressive Guest Line. Ian, thank you for your time, and I guess it's on to the Blue Jays season.
It certainly is. Thanks, guys.
All right. Before we let you go and hit the timeout, we want to let everybody know that we see them every day, people driving using their phones. There's the sneak a peeker or the fast scroller who can quickly become the fender benderer or the they got a ticketer or even the driver who killed someone. Pay attention or pay the price. You drive, you text, you pay. Paid for by NHTSA. We'll take a timeout and we'll come back. A notable playoff streak ended last night in sports. I'll tell you what I'm talking about. And we'll talk a little bit more about playoff streaks in pro sports that are still going. And what does it mean just to get to the playoffs? That time of year with the NBA playoffs and the Stanley Cup playoffs getting going. It's First Name Sports on a Thursday afternoon. John Bellmer, the producer. My name is Greg Frank, hanging out with you for another hour and change. Sportsman Radio.
Is First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, so as the NBA playoffs, I guess, begin on Saturday, I don't think the play-in tournament actually counts because you're playing your way into the playoffs. The Stanley Cup playoffs in the National Hockey League will begin on Monday, and we had the longest active playoff streak in North American pro sports come to a conclusion last night as the Pittsburgh Penguins were eliminated from playoff contention in the Eastern Conference. The New York Islanders and Florida Panthers have clinched the two wild cards in the East, which eliminated the Penguins from postseason contention. And 16 years in a row that the Penguins had made the playoffs. And so it's interesting because we just had the longest active playoff drought in North American pro sports end, which was the Sacramento Kings, who had missed the playoffs for 16 years in a row. And then we have the Penguins, interesting symmetry here in the National Hockey League, having made the playoffs for 16 years in a row, now not in the postseason. Belmar, I know that it's just one half of the league. Like, all you have to do is be in the top half of the league to make the playoffs. But 16 years in a row feels still pretty impressive.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, the type of consistency you have to pull that off is unmatched. I mean, like, when are we going to see another team go 16 seasons in a row?
Like, in any sport.
We're probably not for a while.
Right. Like, you're talking like Tom Brady Patriots level of, like, always good. And I think that it's important, before I get to some of the other streaks in pro sports that are still going, it's important to understand and appreciate the ride that comes with a season in which you make the playoffs. Because the playoffs themselves, in a lot of sports, unless you make a deep run in the NBA or NHL playoffs, which those are two-month-long playoff runs, but for the most part, you know, we just had March Madness end up. It's 3 weeks. Baseball playoffs are about a month. Football playoffs are about a month. So my point is, once you get there, it is going to end quickly for you. It's just a matter of how quickly it ends. So for all the teams that are making the NBA playoffs right now, whose seasons are going to be over in 2 weeks, their actual season only lasted an extra 2 weeks than the Rockets or the Spurs or whoever else you want to use as the worst team in the NBA. But along the way, maybe they gave you, like, for example, I'll go back to the Thunder, who we led the show with. They gave you some hope. They gave you a little bit of an epiphany. That's the word I'm looking for, where you're like, oh, okay, that guy can play and that guy can play. And hey, all of a sudden, maybe our whole team's not bad. And that's part of the fun in being a sports fan, I think, is being able to appreciate the fact that while the playoffs can sometimes end for your team in the snap of a finger, getting there, if you follow the team for the entire course of a regular season, is going to give you a lot more ups and joy as a fan, which is why you watch. I don't think we watch to be miserable, you know? So to make the playoffs 16 years in a row in any sport obviously means that you did enough good things to keep your fan base engaged. And if you're a part of that fan base, that's what you want. You're not going to win the championship every year, and Pittsburgh Penguins did win 3 Stanley Cups in that run. A couple of other playoff streaks that are active in every league here. Belmar, you want to guess? Who's the longest baseball active playoff streak?
Let's say
it's actually pretty easy.
I would say it's the Dodgers.
The Dodgers is correct.
Okay.
At 11 years.
11? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that one, you know, maybe they need to get to 12 or 13 if you don't think it already is right now. But baseball's the hardest sport to make the playoffs in still, even with the expansion that they've done. So, I mean, just the math says you get 6 teams in each league, and there's, 15 teams in each league now that the Astros moved over? Yeah. So 6 out of 15, that's, 40%, right? You know, so they've been in that 40% in the National League for over a decade, and I think a lot of those are National League Western Division titles. So, you know, that exemplifies their exceptional roster building and being able to have the next wave of players come in, because oftentimes, like we talked about with the Raptors post 2019 and, you know, the Hawks the last couple of years after making the conference finals in 2021, these teams that are in the NBA play-in tournament now, things are going to be cyclical, and you're going to have you might have a 4 to 7 year run with a core where you really hope you can win the World Series or win whatever the championship is. And then the finances of the situation are going to result in players leaving, and you know you're not going to be able to stay good for that long. And so the Dodgers, much like we talked about Oklahoma City being able to draft really well in the NBA, the Dodgers are always one of those teams that has a deep farm, and so they have a, you know, Cody Bellinger coming through their system who ends up being an MVP, or you know they have a Walker Buehler coming through their system or whoever. But then they have guys that they can trade. They you know, and then they get a Trey Turner at the deadline. They get a Manny Machado at the deadline. And so I think that's what making the playoffs for that long consecutively is a testament to, is the fact that you're able to build out your roster over the course of a decade and keep the machine churning. And the Dodgers are one of the best examples of that. The Astros certainly as well in the American League. But the Dodgers having made it for 11 years in a row, certainly an indicator of that in Major League Baseball. Would you like to take a stab at the active longest NBA streak?
I'm going to go with Boston.
There you go. You're 2 for 2 on this game, as the Celtics are 9 consecutive seasons in the playoffs, which when I first heard this, I thought, wow, I kind of feel old, because it feels like just yesterday that they were tearing it down, the Kevin Garnett. They made that trade with the Nets, and obviously that ended up being the catalyst for this 9 consecutive seasons in the postseason, because that trade allowed them to get Jason Tatum, allowed them to get Jaylen Brown. But 9 in a row for the Celtics in the playoffs, and, you know, the bulk of those 9, I mean, the first few was like, okay, well, kind of like what I talk about with the Thunder, where you have your young core kind of start to break through. You're still at the bottom of the conference, but there's an up arrow, bottom of the playoff teams in the conference. That was kind of what the Celtics were. And then I'd say once they made the trade for Kyrie, even though he wasn't there long term, I was like, okay, now they're ready to become. They got Gordon Hayward too in free agency. I'm like, now they're ready to become a serious contender. And in 2018, they got to, with Kyrie, they got to the conference finals. Excuse me. Got to the conference finals in the bubble in 2020, got to the NBA finals last year. So it looks like they're obviously here to stay in the NBA. See if you can go 3 for 3. The longest active playoff streak in the National Football League is?
Let's do, who's always there? It's not New England, right? No.
No.
New England was eliminated.
Missed it.
I'm going to go with, I don't know. I don't know. I can't think of
it's not that hard.
It's not that hard.
You might kick yourself when I tell you.
I might. Eagles.
Close. Chiefs.
Oh, duh. Yeah, I'm kicking myself right now.
Yeah. Yeah. 8 in a row for the Chiefs in the postseason. So, you know, and that's also, we talk about being able to keep the operation churning and being able to have that next wave coming. They went from Alex Smith to Patrick Mahomes seamlessly in that streak of 8 straight seasons in the playoffs. And lastly, you know, I chuckled when I saw this one. The National Hockey League, now the longest active playoff streak is the Toronto Maple Leafs. And the funny thing is they haven't won a playoff series in its 7, and they've lost in the first round every year. And they actually have not won a playoff series since 2004. So if they don't win a playoff series this year, they're going to be playing Tampa, too. Again, they seem to always run into Tampa due to the Leafs. It's going to be a full 2 decades without a playoff series win in maybe the biggest hockey market in the world, in Toronto. So there you have it. You know, the longest active playoff streak in North American pro sports comes to a crashing halt last night as the Pittsburgh Penguins eliminated in the Eastern Conference. We'll take a timeout. Interesting couple baseball topics to get to coming up on the other side. We're going to start with one of the negative byproducts of the pitch clock, if you believe this to be a negative byproduct. Some would say, I don't really care. I'll get into what I'm talking about on the other side. Bill Schmid joins from the Packers Radio Network in about 30 minutes or so. to talk about the ongoing standoff between the Packers and the Jets for Aaron Rodgers. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.